Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to the ADHD Mums podcast. We are in season three. And of course, we have Sharon from the Functional Family back. How are you, Sharon?
So excited to be here and chatting with you, Jane.
Really recommend that you go back through the show and have a look at her other episodes. Sharon, do you want to just give me a really quick who you are, what you're about?
So my name's Sharon Collin. I am a credentialed ADHD coach and parenting expert. And I have been doing it for a long time, 15 years. And all of my house are very ADHD. We've got some other things in there as well. We've got OCD, ODD, Tourette's, all of the letters. And my particular niche is to do with families. So I'm a families trained coach. So what that looks like is looking at how the whole family operates. And I'm big on anything that saves time, decreases conflict, and creates a little bit more space, because I live it every day. That's the sort of stuff that lights me up.
One of the reasons I wanted to get Sharon on for the ADHD Mum's Guide to Surviving School Mornings Without Tears. And when we're talking without tears, we're talking theirs, ours, everybody's. This morning I had our dog run off into the distance, and I actually looked at him and thought, kind of get why you've run off, because like I want to do that too. So let's kick this off with some practical tools. Are there some specific tools or approaches to help ADHD parents co-regulate with their kids in those high stress moments, like in the morning? And what do you think they are?
Love this topic and love this question. And I just want to preface all of this stuff by acknowledging that the answers that you're going to hear me say, some generalizations about ADHD today, and I really want to call that for what it is. It's not a consult that I'm looking at specifically your family. So take what you need from it and dismiss what doesn't resonate. But I love going in on practical things. I think before we go into what some tools are, I think we need to acknowledge that this is a sucky time of day, right? So if we go in saying, oh, it's about connection and we've just got to be there for our child at that time of day, I don't think this is the time of day to do that. There's pockets of it, yes, but doing it at this time of day when you've got time pressure, you've got a whole list of really monotonous tasks to get through, it's a sucky time of day. Let's call it what it is. It's about getting through it as quickly and efficiently as possible, and whatever that looks like for your family, so we can do stuff that is better, right?
It's not a time to then go, I'm going to have some quality time with my child. This is probably not going to be that.
It's not. It's like, it's calling it for what it is. That's the same as car trips for my family. It's not going to be where we do our best work. Our family doesn't shine in this setting. Now, that doesn't mean that my family doesn't shine in other settings, right? So we just name it for what it is. It's a sucky time for a lot of families. So there's reasons why it's sucky. Like, we've got executive function challenges. Your audience would know about that. We've got a medication timing gap. A lot of the time, things are escalating as medication's coming on, and in the afternoon where it's coming off. We've got transition challenges. How many transitions can we throw away the freaking morning? Like, there's so much task switching, and that costs our brain in cash. That's why I always think of transitions like cash, paying out cash. Boring tasks. They're boring. There's nothing novel about them. And you can throw some novelty at it, which works for a short time. But either way, they're going to be boring tasks. So we need to outsource to habits in this situation, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later. And then we've got time awareness and that impact. So it's always going to be, for a family where we've got multiple kids with ADHD, perhaps parents with ADHD, a little bit of a sucky time. So I just want to acknowledge that for what it is, because it's about not making it, it's not freaking Sound of Music. We're not going to be like rolling around on a mountain going like singing Do Re Mi. It's about getting things done with as least conflict as possible and making it less sucky, if that makes. And so now if we go into some practical strategies. So my first thing is always going to be about clocking in where we are first. Okay. So our energy and what we bring to the morning really matters. Okay. And I actually like to name it for my kids, because I think we kind of expect for everyone to bring their A game all the time. And I like my kids to know where I'm at in terms of a percentage. I give them a bit of a percentage. I'm running on 60%. I'm running on 40%. You know, I live with a chronic disease, so I'm not always running on 100%. In fact, I'm almost never running at 100%. And so I like to clock it. So I'm doing things that look after me first in that morning. So what that looks like is I am not a functional human without a coffee in the morning. You come and talk to me before I've had a coffee. I'm not going to give you the answer or what you need. I haven't got it in me. So I'm going to take my coffee and I'm going to go and sit somewhere. And the kids are probably going to be doing Fight Club. Let's face it, I've got three boys. They're probably going to be doing Fight Club. I'm just going to sit so I can keep them in my peripheral vision, make sure no one's dying, but I'm going to sit there and have that coffee. That is the thing I did to myself before I get to started with the day. Now, the temptation of dysregulation in the morning is to speed things up. This is where we come in with the rushing energy. Come on, we've got to get out of the car. You've got to get your shoes. Can you get your jacket? And we're dysregulation like speed. So what I do is and we're talking about parent strategies right now, is I intentionally slow it down. Now, this is not a natural place for me to sit. I move quick. Like, I'm a fast person. So I intentionally slow my voice down. I intentionally slow my instructions down. I slow my body movement down just for this time of day, because I know if I bring rushing energy, it just increases dysregulation. And so I'm doing instructions like, hey, buddy, can you tell me what that is next? I'm just slowing it down a little bit because I don't want to meet them at speed. The next one that I really want to talk about in terms of parenting strategies, in terms of co-regulation, these are all strategies in terms of bringing things down a couple of notches, is use your first word whenever something is kicking off, unless it's safety related, is your breath. So the first thing that comes out of your mouth, because I know that if I don't breathe first, what comes out of my mouth is venom. It's not nice. So I take a breath first and then going in for handling whatever we need to handle after that. So this is in terms of parent regulation, in terms of just bringing it down a couple of notches so we don't keep escalating and meeting them where they're at all the time in terms of regulation. So just bringing things down a couple of notches. And then see things for what they are. If a child is struggling, this is a really intense time of day. And I think the temptation can be to talk a lot, which can be more dysregulation for all of us. It adds to that speed and that rushing energy that we bring. Another little tip that I love for mornings is to watch where you position yourself with your child. So a lot of parents, myself included, this is my natural where I'd like to go to, is to position myself as an authority figure and telling the child what to do. Now, we know that for kids with ADHD, they value autonomy. They don't love being told what to do. And this has worked very well for a lot of families. I like to change my position from an authority figure to a person who's standing alongside my kids. And it's not me against the child. It's us against the task. We're beating that task. We're combating that task. Let's make that task. Let's get it done. Instead of me against them. I'm not the task. I'm not creating something else for them to push back against, because all my kids with ODD will push, right? So it's us against that thing, which has been a really helpful reframe for us. And it's just about getting that thing out of the way. Let's get it. Let's crush it. Let's get it out of the way. And then, of course, we're picking our battles very carefully in terms of this, because we don't want to fight every battle in the morning. There might be a list of things that you just let things go. We're not going to fight them about a drop sock. We're not going to fight them about a plate. We're just going to pick a few things that are important. Like, it might be getting dressed. That might be the most important thing. But we're not going to worry about every single thing in that sequence, because the more battles you fight in the morning, the more dysregulated everyone is and the harder it is to bring it down a little bit.
Oh, I love it. I was writing notes actually. And one thing that it really struck me that I love that you said was, I always talk to my hubby about how nothing unites a team more than a common enemy, but you don't want to have you and the other parent, if you have one, or you and another child against another child. The enemy is the task, which is getting ready for school. That is the enemy, and you're all working together. You are not then you and your partner, or you and your older child against your younger child, which could be a really easy dynamic to fall into.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the way that you talked about that. I think that's a really important way, because you're right, your child's not your enemy, but getting ready for school really sucks.
Yeah.
And I think that makes complete sense to me. What do you think some common mistakes are that parents unintentionally make in the process of getting ready for school in the morning?
Okay, so the first one we've already touched on is that rushing energy. Now, the reason that rushing energy is tricky, and you might have heard me say this before, but I'm just going to talk about it again for our listeners. I view the ADHD brain in three modes, okay? And this has nothing to do with the brain or neuroscience. This is a Sharonism, and it's because this is what my simple brain needs to understand when I'm working with kids with ADHD. So I have 3 minutes and they have little flippers on their top of their head and their pinball machines. Think of those little flippers. And I didn't know that they were called flippers, but I just think that makes that this analogy cooler, because in our house, when our kids want to insult each other, they call each other flips, right? So it's not the F word, but it is close. So anyway, we've got flippers. And they're open, they're closed, or they're neutral. Now, open is when the brain is engaged, you've got them on task, you've got your child on task. Now, this is things that open it are praise, the sense that something's easy, the sense that they're doing well, the sense that they're liked, novelty, interest, allowing them to ask questions. These are all open flippers, okay? So when you've got a child with open flippers above their head, your mode is go, so you can go. Then you've got closed. What closes it? Negative feedback, the sense that it's hard, the sense that they're not liked, the sense that it's not easy. Pressure closes it. Now, this is that rushing energy. You come in with pressure, you get a child that's shutting down. Their flippers are closed. And then what does parenting strategies do for a closed flipper? We get taught to push on it. We get taught to push harder. We apply more pressure. Then we start throwing in threats. I'm going to take away the iPad. You're not going to do this. We're applying pressure. That's our strategy when you have closed flippers. And what happens is you give the child nowhere to go. And this is where a lot of parenting strategies fail. We give them nowhere to go. We've only got a child then that can shut down and start going to that paralysis, or they come out swinging. And one of those is a lucky behavior. One of those is an unlucky behavior, right? In terms of attracting attention, they are both the same reaction. They are both flippers. Now, the bird mode becomes particularly important. It's more advanced in terms of when I'm working with parents. It's habit. The habit is when you are not actively engaged. Your brain's not on neither here nor there. It's doing things. We all have habits. Thinking about driving a car, that is a really good example of a neutral brain, like that habit form, neutral mode. We're not actively thinking about it. You're thinking about something else. That is where we want our kids to get to on these boring tasks. We don't want them to be actively thinking about the task. We want them to be thinking about what they're going to do on the weekend and motocross and other things. But it takes time to get there. And so we've got to use different strategies to help them get to neutral mode. And so what we can do, the power of knowing what is that if you're coming up against a closed brain, we don't apply more pressure. We take the pressure off. We go for an open brain strategy. We might ask them a question. We might talk about something they're interested in. We might talk about how they succeeded at something. We just switch it a little bit. And I'm not talking about 20 minutes. I am the most impatient person in the world. I'm talking about 1 minute here, just to get the flippers back open again. So it makes sense for me to think about it like that. Now, I want to preface it by saying that pressure is different to urgency. Urgency kicks in. That has novelty. That is open brain. So I have a lot of clients that work in emergency rooms, ambulance, fire. That's different. Pressure is closed. So there's a distinction there. So we've got rushing energy. We know that doesn't work. Any closed brain strategies don't. That's a mistake the parents work. They apply pressure. They go for negative feedback. They start making threats. It's a closed brain. And then they focus on the behavior rather than systems. If you're focusing on the behavior of your child and what you see in front of you, that is a more advanced strategy that is down the line. I always go for systems first. My favorite quote, and I always joke that I'm going to get this tattooed on my forehead one day. It says, you do not rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems. What that means is having goals, awesome, great, love that for all of you. But what we need is a plan for when things don't go to plan. We fall to the level of our system. So if your systems aren't great, and this is my particular passion when it comes to ADHD family work, if your systems aren't great, that there's nothing to catch you when things don't go to plan, which invariably they don't. They don't go to plan. My house, things don't go to plan. There's fires all the time, spot fires that I'm putting out. And then the biggest one that I see parents do in the morning is they do not allow enough time. I am crazy for procedures and systems. This is how my brain works. And I have timed individual tasks. And I can tell you that more often than not, things take about 4 times longer than most families when there's ADHD in the picture. We need more time in the morning. So that's where we circle back around to systems, because if you don't have strong systems, you don't have enough time to get the task through. Then you start throwing rushing energy. Then you start throwing closed brain strategies. And you just got this perfect storm for complete dysregulation across the board.
Oh, I love it. I think that's so important. I so agree with everything you said. That's been my experience of the mornings as well, particularly when if you have ADHD and you're a solo parent or you're in a partnership with someone who also has ADHD, how can you ever get it done if you don't get up at the right time? and you completely underestimate how long it takes. And then, of course, you get stressed, urgent, and the emotional dysregulation comes on because there's no way you were ever going to get there on time.
Yeah.
That's a great point. What about in terms of task paralysis? If people listening have got multiple kids with ADHD, obviously every child is different. So some children can be really great at some tasks one day they aren't. One child can be really great at getting ready who's 2 or 3 years, 5 years younger than the other. Everyone's at a different level. What kind of is happening when a child shuts down, refuses to move forward? What is going on there? Because that happens for me a lot.
Such a great question. And I think that one thing to clock here when it comes to paralysis is a lot of people assume that it's some sort of procrastination, because the word procrastination gets thrown around with ADHD a lot, but it's actually not. It's not that for our kids. And I think you know that. And the task paralysis is actually an involuntary response to feeling overwhelmed. So it is a closed brain. That's all it is, a closed brain. It's the flippers are closed. And it's people can become frozen by indecision, frozen from being overloaded, frozen from all the information, frozen from the rushing energy and all the thoughts and all the sequences of things that they have to do. So it's just an involuntary response. So what we would do, and I also want to say that a paralysis is the same as coming out swinging when they hit each other. That's, to me, it's the same response. It's closed brain. You just push the child in with pressure into fight or flight. And so and freeze them, but we just push them into freeze versus coming out fight. Now, my boys would be much more inclined to go to the fight model. That's like they're going in there every time. But the same thing, the child who shuts down is having the same nervous system response. It's just quieter. And so the parent then thinks because it's quiet, then we apply more pressure, that it's somehow we can maneuver them along. But it is quite frustrating, right? You have a child who's just shut down, he starts to move like they're in mud. You're like, what are you doing? We need to get out the door. I told you to get your shoes 15 minutes ago. We all had that. So it is a lucky behavior in terms of a response, in terms of how much attention it draws and socially acceptable, whatever that is. But it is, in a sense, overwhelm, and it's a closed brain strategy. So our job is to help them open it again. I would use exactly the same strategy. So we would just bring it back. What are the things that we know that open the brain? Okay, praise. Is there something that we can clock that they did well that morning? Let's just start talking about that. We can still be doing other things. We're just talking about, hey, I know you've got ducks. I've seen it on your story. I'm really jealous. I also want chicken. I'd be like, hey, I saw how you were so gentle with that duck this morning, if that's their interest. You just start talking about that while you're packing the lunches. We're just going to bring it back to an open brain strategy. Then we might clock at how much time we're leaving for the mornings. And once we've done our open brain strategy and we can start seeing that it's a little bit open, and I literally picture this above my kid's head. So we go to an open brain strategy. And then we want to check how much time we're leading. If we are bringing that rushing energy, that's something that we can do out of the heat of the moment. And then you know how you get told, break tasks down into smaller steps, right? That is another job for a mum who has ADHD. That is a whole extra level of executive function that she probably doesn't have the space for in that moment. So let's outsource that crap to AI. Goblin tools, get it on your phone, get it on your desktop, whatever. Put whatever it is, the sequence that your child needs to move through, and put it into Goblin Tools and let that AI little goblin break that stuff down for you so your child can tick it off, cross it out, which I think I really like on Goblin Tools. That's also a little bit of novelty there as well. Now, we are going to talk about visual schedules, I'm sure, but one thing that I do think that is important to mention is that we tend to stack tasks on top of each other. So stacking a task or stacking a question for a kid with ADHD is really tricky. Stacking a question is when you go, hey, can you get your shoes? And while you're there, grab your hat, right? We've just given them two things, and that can lead to paralysis. But we also stack when we get a little bit of open brain. And I know this is a little detail, but I think it's quite important to mention. So you say to your child, can you eat breakfast? And they start doing it. And then as a mum, you get excited because they're doing the thing. So then you see a little opening. And you go, oh, and then when you do that, can you do your room and can you blah, 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 blah. And we stack it and they shut. And then we go into paralysis because we see that glimmer of hope. So we really want to pare that back to just the one. I know it's so exciting when we can get them to move forward and we get the sense that they're moving forward. But when we stack it, we put them into paralysis a lot. And it's about fucking that as well. It's having that awareness. There's so much that we can do for task paralysis. But I think your audience taking away that it is essentially just a closed brain, that flippers are closed, can be the game changer.
I've heard you talk about the wave in regards to burnout and feeling it come up and getting ahead of it. And I think it's great. I also think a child being an open or a closed brain would be a little bit like a wave too, because as a mum would be able to detect, okay, it was open, but I've just said two things. Now I'm looking at possibly it's closing over. And I think it's a really great point, because we can often sense it in our children, and then you can get ahead of it if you can before it completely closes over. If you thought that you were possibly looking at a child that was starting to close over, maybe something you've said, maybe other circumstances, other children, whatever it is, what kind of steps can you take in the moment to try and get it to be back open before it fully closes?
So we know what opens it. So you can ask a question. If it's not too closed, asking a question on something that they're interested in, just ask a question while you keep doing your other thing. You can talk about an interest of theirs. You can give them praise for something before that you saw them doing. Now, not all kids are comfortable with verbal praise. I want to preface that. A lot of people say praise kids with ADHD. Not all kids are comfortable with that. So my get around, I've got a child who's not comfortable with verbal praise. I ring grandma and just let him overhear. I'd have a fake conversation with my mum. I say, oh my gosh, you should have seen him. He was amazing. And it's not at him, but he can hear it, right? So it's like telling someone else how great I think he is. But you don't even have to do that. You can do hand signals. There's lots of other things that you can do depending on what your child's comfortable with. Asking questions, going for something that they're interested in for 1 minute. Like, I'm talking 1 minute. Like, what are you doing there? Is that a game? What's that? Like, oh, can you tell me a little bit about that? Now you've got the brain back opening again. People go, their first response to this is, I don't have time for that. But I tell you what takes longer. Paralysis. Meltdown. Those, when they start fighting, that takes longer than 1 minute of asking a question or praise or whatever it is that you can do to get the open brain strategy. And then if you can't do that, if you go, I really don't have time, throw novelty at it. Novelty works. Start talking in an accent. Make fart noises. Do whatever you need to throw a bit of novelty at it. You squawk like a bird. Like, I can yell my kids' names from here, right? No one will come. No one will come. No one will even look. They'll be like, that lady is going to ask us to do something that is boring, right? I start squawking like a bird, start talking about ice cream, they're all down here. Throw a bit of novelty at it.
Oh, I just have to say, I so agree with what you're saying. I think we've all been through those strategies where you threaten or punish and you try and up the intensity and you get a child that just closes over, and it can take, two of my children will just put themselves to bed. They will just go and get back into bed under the covers, and it's like good luck pulling them out. It's tricky. Once they're in bed, we are way done. So it can be really anxiety provoking when you're trying to get things moving, but doing it in ways that are specific for each child. That is really overwhelming and draining. Although I believe everything that you said, that it works, because I've been in those situations before as well. And I know that if I'm on in the beginning, right from the start, it's definitely going to be better, but it can be anxiety producing. And there is a little bit of grief for me that I know that I'm not really going to be able to have much of a cup of tea in the mornings. There's not really ever a slow morning, because there's a lot of groundwork that you have to do to get the day started. However, that short-term amount of energy that you put in has a payoff throughout that day. And I completely agree with you. And I also think what you said about novelty is great too. I'm very well known for opening up the sliding door and to start yelling, steak, steak. There's a pie then, just to try and divert. And there's no snake, obviously, because I wouldn't want the children running towards me if I had a snake. But just to try and divert off from what they're doing, I think the novelty, anything you can do to divert if it starts to get crisis level, you've got to get creative. I think you've made a really good point. And comedy is something that I think needs to be used there as well, which I think you said so well as well. I think I love that. The other thing I wanted to talk about is a lot of parents try the visual schedules, which then link into the reward chart. Then we're going down into reward and punishment. What kind of alternatives can we use if you don't think that they work for your child?
When it comes to visual schedules, guys, just don't buy anymore. Okay. If you have to spend money on it and it's on Etsy or it comes up and you've got to, we've all dropped, just as a figure here, Jane, let's throw out how much money have we spent on like ADHD stuff that didn't work?
I reckon maybe I'd be on $1,000.
It's quite staggering. And a lot of the visuals fail because they are relying on delayed gratification, right? And delayed gratification in kids with ADHD, it's just not a match. We need instant. So if you are going to put a reward out there, and I don't think rewards are it's not my great favorite long-term strategy, but till we can get to that habit, to a neutral brain, I don't mind it, right? If it works for your child. But you best make it instant. So if you're going to throw a reward, think about it. Show me the ice cream, right? If you're going to promise you can do this, you get ice cream, you better have that ice cream in your hand. Show me the ice cream. It's got to be there. It's not, I'll pay you, I'll get the ice cream when we go to grandma's and we go to the blah, blah, blah. That's too long gone. So we can do those sorts of things. And that's why a lot of reward charts fail, because it's like 7 stars till you get the thing. I'd rather you get 7 little things and you get it straight away than building up to something. Now, some children have a little bit more capacity for that, but I think we've got to rely on instant gratification rather than delayed gratification. Now, in terms of motivation and intrinsic motivation to get these tasks done, I think that a lot of them fail because we actually are wanting the child to come up with intrinsic motivation for this. And I can tell you, I don't think there's many adults that have intrinsic motivation to get these boring things done. So I think we're positioning it wrong. My whole strategy for these kind of boring, monotonous tasks is to go into neutral, to go into habit, right? Whatever you need to get there to get it done, because we've already got habits. So for example, is I brush my teeth and for some unknown reason, I rinse it 3 times. And if I do it 2, I feel off. My body feels off. I don't know why. I haven't done my usual sequence. Your child's already running patterns and already running sequences. We just want to make sure that we can get these boring tasks into that sequence somehow. So it might be that after we do this, then we do this, and we keep it on the same kind of pattern. So we flow through that morning. That's quite a complex thing to get. Like I said, that third element of the open and closed neutral brain, that's kind of the more complex side of things. But essentially, if we're looking at a reward chart, don't spend any money on it. Make it yourself on Canva or whatever you need to do, because the reason I say that is you need to be able to change it, okay, to keep it novel, and you need to expect that you are going to have to refer to it. There's no magic button that you're going to say to your children, like, this is what I used to do. And please don't ever do grand announcements to your child, to your family with ADHD. Don't ever go like, from now on, we're all going to be the family that uses this whiteboard. Like,
oh, we're all gluten-free.
Yeah, all of my family instantly, as soon as I make that announcement, are going to go, we're never, ever going to do that, ever. So don't make any announcements about it. Just start doing it. Start using it. And then we want to make sure that we're referring to it. So we need to show that we are using it. We're not relying on our children to do it, because we're helping them. It's not about them doing the chart. It's about them doing it enough that it goes into that habit mode, right? So it goes into that neutral. Well, that's all we're trying to do, is establish, do it enough times, which takes much longer for a person with ADHD to establish the habit. But please know that there is this limiting belief that circles around our ADHD community that's like, I can't learn new habits, can't do it. Now, that is absolutely bogus. They can learn new habits. In fact, you're doing it all the time. We weren't born with an iPhone, but we very rarely lose those, right? Like, I know some people lose them occasionally, but we carry those things around. That's a habit that we've established. We carry around a handbag. We've established that habit. We all have been capable of establishing new habits. And the good news is, once they take a little longer to establish, but once we establish them, people with ADHD hold onto them longer than neurotypical people. So it is worth pushing through and making sure that you can support your kids to go into that neutral mode to establish those patterns. When it comes to visuals, we want to make it an absolute have to do. Like, in terms of what do they have to do for their own self-care, not what I would like them to do. Now, I see parents do this all the time. They come up with this beautiful chart, and it is as if the stars had aligned and their child had all the executive function and medication had kicked in and all of these things. They're a beautiful chart, but it's literally wishful thinking, the amount of stuff that they've got onto them. Or the other mistake is they go and refer to another chart. Like the chart will be like, do morning chores. And then it's like going to another place to do that. No, we just want to keep it. Like, what are the things that if you couldn't do anything, like it was the absolute necessities. So eat breakfast, get dressed, brush teeth. Now, the reason that I say only keep the necessities on there is you want them to hit it. You want them to hit the target and you don't want it to be another point of friction. You want it really easy for them to hit it. As they grow and we work on this, we can add things to it one by one. But for the moment, let's keep it right back down to the necessity. Now, my whole strategy with this stuff is when we want our child to hit the target, we remove barriers. We make it as easy as possible for them to hit it. Because I want them to have that success and them to cross it off or whatever they're doing to mark that win, I want them to hit it. I need them to feel that success of completion. So that's why I say take it down to necessities and remove barriers. So if that removing barrier would be like, I want my child to brush the teeth, so I'm going to put the toothbrush in front of them while they're having breakfast. Like that's just going to live there. I'm not going to put it there. It's just going to live there. So that's where it lives now. That's removing a barrier and taking away an obstacle. And it works in reverse too. If you want a behavior that you want to discourage, we add barriers. We make it a little bit harder for them to hit it. And that's it. It's the easiest parenting fallback because you can add and remove barriers and it's not active parenting. You're just using your environment to your advantage, which really helps. I do think charts have a place, like a visual schedule has a place, because I also like that when it's asking us not to make a demand, we're just referring to the chart. So I might refer to the chart of very necessary things and I might say to my child, what do you think you'd like to do next? Instead of saying you need to put your shoes on to a child that's got oppositional behaviors, they're going to go, no, I don't. So I say, what do you think you'd like to do next? This one or this one? What do you reckon? And keeping it nice and neutral. So I do think they have a spot, but in terms of reward charts and delayed gratification and adding so much on, having intricate magnet systems, let's all let that go. You're never going to find the magnets again once you put them on the chart. Let's keep it basic and to a minimum and remove barriers so they can hit it.
Sharon, I've loved this episode. I think we've only gone through about half the questions that I was wanting to go through. However, there's also been so many takeaways that I'm thinking if we continue on, people are going to be like needing to get papers and pens. So what I was thinking is I might save the other half of the questions and we might do a listener request for questions and then maybe we come back and I can finish the rest of my questions.
It's absolutely fine by me. Yeah.
We're going to read book Sharon, and I'm also going to take questions from listeners for Sharon on the morning routines, and then we are going to come back and reconvene. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for your time, Sharon.
Thank you so much for having me, Jane.
Thank you so much.